Welcome to CRE Radio with Howard Klein, radio for and about the commercial real estate professional. Our focus is exploring issues facing landlords and tenants, property and asset managers, investors, brokers, lenders, and everyone in the industry. Our style is conversation over coffee with highly experienced commercial real estate professionals. Over 35 years, Howard's legal and commercial real estate practice has centered on broker, leasing, and property management issues. CRE Radio is presented with the intent of engaging, educating, and entertaining our audience. Access our archive shows, upcoming schedule, and engaging articles at creradio.com or subscribe to the show on iTunes by searching for CRE Radio. And now, here's Howard Klein.
Welcome to Commercial Real Estate Radio, and I'm not going to mention my name because I have a note here saying that you just heard my name. Today's topic is the new lease accounting standards, and our featured guests are Michael Vandergoot, Peter Mars, and Mike Hammerslag. Please keep in mind that I'm going to reference Michael as Michael Vandergoot and Mike as Mike Hammerslag, and I know that I'm going to mess this up, so gentlemen, hang in there with me. Our call-in number is 619-393-6492. That's 619-393-6492. Press 1 to be put into the queue. You could also Twitter us or tweet us at Twitter using the @CRE Radio, or give more detailed comments at creradio.com/leases. So, without further ado, gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
Well, thank you, Peter. I'm glad that you joined in. So, why don't we start out with Mike Hammerslag giving us a 30-second elevator speech telling us what he does and why he's on the show. Michael? Mike, sorry.
There you go. First mess up, right?
Right.
I'm a real estate solutions strategist with a firm called Lucernex Technologies. I've been in the real estate business for 25 years, including positions as an academic in real estate. I currently lead our practice and review everything to do with the upcoming lease accounting changes, including working with our technology platform, which is ideal for and used by retailers and others for lease administration and rent accounting purposes. And that's a quick summary.
Well, great. And Michael, why don't you tell us about what you do?
Sure. My name is Michael Vandergoot. I am a CPA. I've been in the real estate area for over 20 years in different capacities, from a controller to operating officer for several different developers. And the last 4 or 5 years, I've been working as a lease auditor for a company called BC Compliance Group. We are basically a tenant representative firm focusing on different areas and avenues of how we can save money and reduce occupancy costs for our tenants.
Wonderful. And Peter, last but not least.
And I'm on the flip side of the coin of Michael. I am currently the Chief Operating Officer for Partners REIT, which is a Canadian-based owner and acquirer of necessity-based shopping centers. And I've had the pleasure of working in this industry for over 3 decades in 8 different countries.
And Peter has, as I mentioned earlier before the show, Peter has more titles at the end of his name than anybody else that I know, and he's telling me that ICSC is coming up with another one. I don't even know what his name is anymore. It's Peter and then acronym. So,
something like that.
Yeah. All right. Why don't we get right into the show now? Before I do that, let me just mention, although you can't have it because we've recently retired it, Peter and Michael have done this show with me about a little over 2 years ago, actually about 2.5 years ago, at which time I had no knowledge of lease accounting standards, and now I have barely more. So this show, we're going to try to address for those non-accountants and non-CPAs out there so that you can understand what it is that these lease accounting standards mean to you in commercial real estate. So with that, Mike, why are we even talking about lease accounting standards?
Well, for a long time, many companies have used lease accounting to provide access to assets without actually recognizing them on their balance sheet. So typically, what has historically happened in U.S. accounting and international is that leases show up on the income statement of a company as an expense, but do not show up on the balance sheet of the company as either an asset or a liability.
Well, if you took a breath and we're going to speak some more, I can't say so. I kind of jumped in there. Michael, why do we really, what does the average person really care about whether or not it's on the balance sheet or income statement?
Once this goes through, it's estimated that $1.2 trillion will be added to the balance sheets. Liabilities will be added to the balance sheets of entities, public entities and small entities. That number may or may not grow. It all depends on how each entity decides how they're going to analyze their renewal options and things of that nature. But these are true liabilities that companies have signed on for. They've executed contracts saying that they are liable for this money, and none of it has been on the balance sheet directly. It has been in footnotes, but it doesn't really necessarily come over and show the impact on the balance sheet. And this will do that. It's going to bring to light a lot of info.
I'm still not sure what all of that means. Peter, help me out. I'm not suggesting you didn't explain it well, but for our purposes here, you guys have to bring yourself down to my level. It may get dirty down here, but I got to tell you, if I understand it, everyone else out there will understand it.
So there are two types of liabilities under leases. There are capital liabilities, and then there are operating leases. And the idea was that before, under the generally accepted accounting principles, the companies that end up with a bunch of airplanes, for an example, or a fleet of cars, didn't necessarily reflect those on the balance sheet. So the liability that would be incurred by the company for those kinds of capital commitments wasn't being recognized anywhere. So an investor didn't really understand what was the full makeup of the company and the true liabilities of that company that made up the revenues and the asset base.
Okay, you just used a phrase that I see in leases a lot.
Generally accepted accounting principles?
GAAP. Thank you very much. GAAP. You see that a lot in leases, particularly when it comes to CAM charges and everything. Does this have anything to do with GAAP and how people deal with their CAM charges at all?
It does, in as much as it needs to be recognized. But understand that in the leases, the idea is to move from GAAP to a harmonized international accounting standard. So it's really just moving from one way of accounting for things to another way of accounting for things that is more universal rather than the generally accepted accounting principles of the individual country. So it will only really have an impact, I think, relative to how people are looking at the sheets if they're an investor from another country. They'll see some things that are similar from a way of presentation.
Good. I want to talk about this international national thing. Right now we're discussing the new lease accounting standards with our guests here on CRE Radio. We will be back in a moment.
The Institute of Real Estate Management believes good management matters and that well-managed properties pay big dividends. IREM delivers the power of knowledge and recognizes the importance of sharing it. IREM serves real estate professionals who manage all property types. They're dedicated to delivering cutting-edge networking and educational opportunities for every stage of your career. How can IREM help you? To count the ways, log on to IREM Orange County. That's IREMOC.org. Learn more today. If you're a retail tenant, you really should belong to the NRTA. They're an organization of the tenants, by the tenants, and for the tenants. Whether you manage a large portfolio or just a mom and pop, the National Retail Tenants Association is on your side. NRTA exists to protect retail tenants everywhere and to make sure landlord billings are correct. Don't wait for your next statement of CAM charges to arrive. Log on to retailtenants.org. That's retailtenants.org. Find out more today. For questions, feedback, or topics you'd like to hear about, you can reach us on our website. Click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com, on Twitter, send a reply to @CREradio, via email to questions@CREradio.com, or call in during the live show at 619-393-6492 and press 1 to be placed in queue.
Well, glad to have you with us today. Before the break, we were talking about this national, international aspect of these new lease accounting standards. Mike, why has there been a difference between these two standards, and why do we really care?
Well, historically, there's always been a certain amount of divergence between the two. Typically, the U.S. standard has been a bright line or rules-based format where it was always very clear when a particular accounting regulation was supposed to be used or executed. The international methodology is one that's been more of a framework-based methodology where there was much more, there was a little bit more cloudiness, if you will, as to when exactly a rule was to be applied.
Mike, can I interrupt you a second? Mike, what do you mean by framework?
Simply just the rules as they should be applied to the financial transactions of a company. Okay, and the framework is the rules as presented. In this case, we've been talking about FASB rule, basically FAS 13 on the U.S. side and IAS 17 on the international side.
What's FASB?
That's the rule that applies.
What's FASB? What's FASB and IASB?
FASB, Financial Account,
Financial Accounting Standards Board.
Yes, for the FASB.
You're too young to have a senior
International Accounting
moment.
Standard, IASB as well.
Okay. Before you even go any further, I'm going to interrupt you because I knew that we were going to have acronyms like crazy in this show. So my producer, Mike, suggested I tell a little story about... I got another senior moment about acronyms and a billboard that says something about not having standards. Oh, my goodness. I should have gotten more sleep. So let's move on. But whenever you start using acronyms, I am going to interrupt you. No acronyms. Or you can use acronyms, but we have to explain what they are first. So now that I've gotten you totally off topic, Mike, go right ahead. Where were you?
The goal here of combining the international standards is one basically to open up the capital markets so that when a company looks for or to access capital either in the U.S. or internationally, that there isn't a learning curve that's necessary either by those providing capital, or it shortens the learning curve for those providing capital and those investing in those companies. A combined accounting standard does that.
That's a good explanation. I like it's basically comparing apples with apples. Correct?
Correct.
And we're living in an international world. Everybody's doing business with all other countries, so it's not being different just doesn't make sense. If you borrow money, it might be from a bank outside the United States or in another country. So This kind of makes sense to me. How do you like that? Let's talk a little bit about the historical background. And since Michael and Peter did the original show that I did a little over 2.5 years ago, why don't we start with Peter? Why weren't we talking now about these standards today? Actually, Michael has an interesting story about the new standards that just came out. So I want to know why 2 years ago and why now? Michael?
Sure. 2 years ago, the original exposure draft was issued after a lot of discussion. And they had a comment period, and when the comment period was over, they had 786 comment letters issued into the Financial Accounting Standards Board, to FASB, regarding this issue, this topic, some for, some against. They realized that there was such a dramatic pushback or questions because they were unclear, some of the standards, that they needed to go back, do a whole bunch of meetings and stakeholders, and for over a year they kept saying that it's going to be issued. The new standard will be issued at the end of the quarter, at the end of 2012, and then it was pushed to the first quarter, and then it was pushed to the second quarter. And it was all because they were rewriting. There wasn't 100% unanimous, even within the FASB, regarding the proposals that they put forward. There was some people that were against the way it was drafted, but in the end, they ended up still finally coming to a point where they were going to issue the standard. Since it was originally issued, I've been doing certain speaking engagements, CPE events for different CPA firms and different CPA clients and things of that nature. And I had one scheduled on May 16th. At the time, they hadn't reissued the new standard yet. So everything I said was in that talk was basically, here's the information that we have based upon emails and discussion. You have to keep looking out for the new standard. A little while later, all of a sudden, at the break of my talk, and it said, a person came up to me and said, you know, just so you know, I followed your link that you put on your slide, and your standard was issued this morning. So everything I had said, I basically had to come back and say, okay, now you can go and read it for yourself because they finally just issued it. So now that they've reissued it, there have definitely some changes from the first one, and you have until, I believe it's September 13th, I think, comments are due, for this standard now. So there's still time. After you've had an opportunity to read this light 340-page document, you can go out and make the comments if you're for or against this.
Well, Peter, what are the most egregious problems with the standards that came out 2 years ago, or at least from your perspective?
Well, from my perspective, and understand, I'm an operator. I'm not an accountant. So I look at this a little bit differently than others. But the hardest thing was that they lumped all types of leases together in the first draft and treated them all the same. And the big problem with that was that not all leases are created equal. Off the top of the show, I talked about the difference between an operating lease and a capital lease. And for an example, in the case of commercial real estate, a person will lease space in a building because they can't buy that space in the building, and that is owned by the owner. And what they were doing in the original draft is they were lumping space leases in with saying, for an example, a lease for an airplane, which is a form of financing where a person could potentially buy that airplane at the end of the day. So it created a whole bunch of confusion in the marketplace as to, does this go on the balance sheet? Does it go into the operating statements? How do you put it on your balance sheet? Was there residual value? How would you account for that? Does the landlord have to have a certain level of disclosure in the first draft that it really didn't want to get into? Does the tenant have a certain amount of disclosure that would put it in a negative position for negotiations that it didn't want to get into because it was required to carry what it thought was the value of the leases on its books? So in a nutshell, without rehashing all of the show that we did 2 years ago or 3 years ago, the big problems, I think, may have been addressed in this draft in as much as they've recognized that there are leases that are done for financing, and then there's leases where you don't have an option. You have to lease the property, and that has simplified everybody's lives to some degree.
We're going to pause briefly for a word from our sponsors. When we come back, I want to talk about what these changes separating, you know, for instance, personal property lease from a real property lease. What does that really mean, bottom line, to an operator? So we'll be right back.
What's next for commercial real estate and retail marketing? Pop-up retail, and it's here now. PopUpInsider.com is the premier online resource for owners to advertise and fill properties for temporary use. PopUpInsider.com is where merchants and brands shop for temporary locations. See for yourself. Go to PopUpInsider.com, create your own account, market your empty spaces or view available locations for your business, all on one convenient site, PopUpInsider.com.
Manage a shopping center? Always looking for new ideas? Tactics. Tactics Magazine is the idea magazine for shopping center marketing directors all over the world. Exciting promotions, gift with purchase programs, and full-blown ad campaigns. Every edition of Tactics is packed with features, ideas, and news you can use to get the word out and grow your numbers. How can you manage a shopping center without your tactics? Log on to tacticsmagazine.com. Today would be good. tacticsmagazine.com.
For questions, feedback, or to suggest a topic, here's how to reach us. On our website, click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @creradio or via email to questions@creradio.com.
Welcome back to CRE Radio today. Thanks for being with us. We were just talking, Peter was just mentioning about, you know, the difference between the various leases, and that's probably the biggest biggest distinguishing factors between the proposed lease accounting standard changes of 2 years ago and today. But what I'd like to understand is what does that really mean to the retailer or the tenant versus the landlord in other than accounting perspective? I mean, what's the bottom line is, why do they care whether or not this is treated as an airplane lease versus a real property lease? Mike Hammerslag, why don't you start with that?
Well, under the new proposed accounting regulations here, what we're going to see is we're going to see two types of assets, and they've been very inventive. They'll be called Type A and Type B. Real estate will be Type B assets. The notable distinguishing factor between the two from a financial statement standpoint is that Type B assets will still be recognized on a straight line cost basis on the income statement. However, in this new format, it's called a single lease expense. Uniquely, however, the other type of asset, the Type A asset, the airplane, if you will, depending on the length of the lease, will actually have both an interest component and amortization component, resulting in two entries on the income statement, which is going to have them behave differently, if you will, on the income statement and subsequent balance sheet, and also affecting financial metrics, ratios, current ratio, perhaps, of the company, and therefore impacting other areas such as employment agreements, lending agreements, and related types of entities, if you will, or
okay.
transactions.
Let's talk about the employment agreements and when you talk about behaving differently. Let's talk a little bit about that. What do you mean by behaving differently?
Well, typically at the senior executive level, it is not uncommon for people to receive not even the top level, but for bonus structures within companies to be dependent upon corporate performance. Those corporate performance metrics will change under the new accounting standards. So while you have historical agreements out there with employees, you will have new results based on the new accounting metrics, regulations, and hence those agreements may need to be renegotiated.
Now that's interesting. Are you suggesting that because of these proposed changes, you often see, let me give you an example, in employment agreements where the bonuses are based upon EBITDA. Will EBITDA change?
Based on certain types of assets, yes.
Okay, so anyone who's being paid based upon some sort of financial calculations other than a gross revenue of a shopping center, for example, they should at least understand this and revisit this with someone who understands and will be able to tell what it is that they may need to change.
Well, for the shopping centers, it might not be. There are certain shopping centers that may qualify for a Type A lease, but the Type B lease, which is most real estate, the lease expense is going to be above the line, which means above the line where EBITDA is. So it's not going to be as dramatic of a change if they're already straight lining most of their lease components already. Where the big change is going to come into play as far as EBITDA goes is going to be on the Type A, which is how the original standard had come out previously. Both were going to be below the line. Now that's when they separated in Type A and Type B. Type B, the real estate, is going to be above as one lease expense, but Type A will be below the line and as interest and amortization. So that's where one of the big differences is going to be from the old exposure draft to the new exposure draft is that change, and it won't have as dramatic of an effect on EBITDA for the real estate side, but it will still have a very big effect on the equipment side.
So if a listener was an accounting moron like me, then the bottom line for them is they need to go to someone who knows what they're talking about to see if their employment agreement is affected by any of these changes. I mean, from my perspective, I don't need to understand, you know, what these changes are. I just want to know whether or not it affects me and how to maximize whatever I get out of it. And all of you would be the kind of people that someone might go to, correct?
No, I'll defer to the two Michaels.
I'm assuming that's correct for the two Michaels.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Good. Now, I've got a note here from Mike Hammerslag where he talks about the right-to-use model. Could you delve into that again, if you haven't already?
Well, it's the underlying principle, if you will, of the new accounting regulations as proposed under the exposure draft, that they're looking at the leasing transaction as a right-of-use model, in effect, a right to use the asset, and therefore, because you have control of the asset for a period of time, the underlying current or reason, if you will, therefore to place it onto the balance sheet as both an asset and a liability of the firm.
Okay. All right. So, why don't we take a short break and hear from the people who pay the bills around here? And when we come back, I'd like to talk about specifically the type of people who actually need to know a little bit more about this, whether it be property managers, asset managers, investors, other than accountants, who really needs to know about this. So we'll be back in a moment.
Attention commercial real estate brokers and professionals. Have you ever struggled to find the true ownership behind a commercial property? What about finding the phone number, email, and name of the actual decision maker? ProspectNow.com tracks this information on more than 10 million commercial and multifamily properties nationwide. Howard's listeners are invited to a 3-day free trial. Simply go to ProspectNow.com and enter the promotion code Howard.
That's ProspectNow.com.
If you need anything with your company logo on it, you need Monogram Magic. T-shirts, ball caps, polo shirts, anything. Monogram Magic does it beautifully, does it right, and does it right on time. For over 20 years, Monogram Magic has produced corporate apparel your people will be proud to wear. Large orders or small, it's all about attention to detail. See for yourself. Here's the website, logostolife.com. That's L-O-G-O-S, the number 2, then L-I-F-E.com. Logostolife.com. For questions, feedback, or topics you'd like to hear about, you can reach us on our website. Click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @CREradio, via email to questions@CREradio.com, or call in during the live show at 619-393-6492 and press 1 to be placed in queue.
Welcome back to our discussion of the new lease accounting standards. Now, when we were last speaking, we were going to get into the issue of the specific categories of commercial real property professionals who really have some interest. So I'm going to throw out the categories, if you will. Let's talk about investors in commercial real estate. Are these people who really need to know about this and why? Peter, why don't you, you're involved in that end of it, why don't you start?
Well, as stated before, the investor isn't necessarily just from inside the borders of the United States. The investor could come from another country. And so rather than relearning a whole new set of accounting standards, the proposed standards and moving to an international standard will shorten the learning curve so they have a better understanding of their investment. So I see that it is a positive impact for investors from that particular standpoint. And there could be some downsides for investors as they look at the various companies that are reporting, depending upon how this ultimately gets rolled out. And I'll give you an example from the country that I'm operating in now, Canada. Canada actually has two accounting standards. Canada uses the International Accounting Standard for all publicly traded companies, but for privately traded companies, they have the option of using the generally accepted accounting principles used in Canada, commonly referred to as CanGAP, or if they do intend to go public at some point in time in the future, the international standards. So if the investor is investing in a private company in Canada, they have to be aware that that company could be operating under GAP rather than the international standards.
Yeah, so it makes a difference if you're a big or small company, correct? Or at least for
correct.
Canadian companies. What about U.S. companies, Michael?
That would be true as well. A lot of the smaller companies currently still utilize tax as their reporting model, unless they're getting certain types of financing that require them to issue GAAP statements. They can get away with not using this standard. If they are intending on, as far as a real estate owner or developer, if they're interested in actually becoming a REIT or getting certain types of financing, they will need to understand. In the previous draft, there was some lesser information that was provided. This one has much more detail regarding the lessor than the previous one, basically on just how to treat certain things. It's a lot of minutia, but it's important to note that there are definitely areas that lessors will need to know if they are required to issue gap statements. There's some private entity issues coming up, but they haven't been passed yet.
Okay, so does it make any difference if you're a public or private company, or is that the same difference that you would consider in terms of big versus small? Anybody raise your hand? I can't see you, so don't raise your hand. Mike?
Well, I think that it depends on what your financial arrangements are. Clearly, if you're a public company, then you have to comply. You have to present your information in a very specific way. And the burgeoning size of certain entities' balance sheets will be quite a surprise for certain investor types. If you're a private company, clearly it may look quite different, although, as mentioned by Michael, certain lending agreements may have certain components of it that may need to be evaluated.
So are the lenders all going to go to the new standard so that even the mom and pops may have to do their accounting in accordance with this rather than tax accounting?
It's possible if they require gap statements. Like I said, there's a new private entity discussions going on, which may, you know, in one form or way, kind of create a big gap, little gap, which is, you know, big company versus small company. But we're not there yet.
Okay. We have a caller who's got a question, Tyler, who has a question. Well, I'll let Tyler ask the question. Tyler, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
Welcome to the show, Tyler. What's your question?
My question is this. I'm an MAI appraiser and a CPA, and I've got kind of a practical question for you. It's fairly specific, but if two questions, actually. One, how often, in terms of real estate leases, will they need to be valued? And two, if they're valued, say, on an annual basis, how will the change in the leasehold or lease fee value be represented on a balance sheet, for instance? If a cap rates go up or down, how is the present value going to be, is it going to be reflected on the balance sheets, if you will? I hope that makes sense to you.
Well,
it does.
Okay, Michael, go ahead. Why don't you...
I was just going to say, from the lease side, from the lessee side, they are considered initially what the payments are going to be. They're determined from that point, and it's based on the incremental borrowing rate of the lessor, if known. If not, there's another area. Cap rate, as far as that goes, doesn't fall into that valuation from a lessee standpoint. It is evaluated, but only when there's a significant economic reason to reevaluate it. Previously, it was reevaluated every reporting period in the old exposure draft. In this one, they've changed it, so it's just that there's a significant change in a significant economic event to make you revalue, or if you're absolutely going to renew and you didn't project that you were going to before, or if something's happened and you're not going to renew, then you would make an adjustment at that time. But the interest rate that's used is set at the initial time of recording. On the lessor side, that might be a different situation when you're valuing a property. So as far as an investor goes, I'm not sure how that's going to be all treated. That's a good question.
Does anybody else have any comment from the lessor side? Okay. Well, listen, we will return for a moment from our guests right after these messages.
Do more business with your biggest clients.
Techniques Marketing has perfected exciting new ways to increase your revenue with all your key accounts, way beyond trial and error. And we've done it with some of the biggest companies in America. Look, if you're happy with your numbers, great. If not, let's talk. Visit TechniquesMarketing.com. T-E-C-H, that's the tech. N-I-Q-U-E-S, there you've got the Neeks. TechniquesMarketing.com. The Institute of Real Estate Management believes good management matters and that well-managed properties pay big dividends. IREM delivers the power of knowledge and recognizes the importance of sharing it. IREM serves real estate professionals who manage all property types. They're dedicated to delivering cutting-edge networking and educational opportunities for every stage of your career. How can IREM help you? To count the ways, log on to IREM Orange County. That's IREMOC.org. Learn more today. For questions, feedback, or to suggest a topic, here's how to reach us. On our website, click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @CREradio or via email to questions@CREradio.com.
Okay, we are back with our guests, Michael Vandergoot, Peter Morris, and Mike Hammerslag. And we were just fielding some questions from Tyler. Tyler, could you repeat your second question?
Yeah, my second question had to do with the lessor side of the balance sheet reporting, just in terms of if you've present value reporting of a lease, say it's recorded as an asset, but say capitalization rates fluctuate, you know, 100 or 200 basis points, and all of a sudden there is significant loss in the asset. How is that going to be reflected on the balance sheet?
Yeah. Okay. Mike Hammerslag, you want to try that, or Peter? Doesn't sound like anybody wants to answer your question, Tyler.
Well, I've asked it before to other professionals, and no one seems to know the answer to it yet.
Well, that should be the first clue that we have here. Well, what? Let's see if we can talk about it. I don't understand this enough. Does anybody here have any clue, or is this just simply out of our field of discussion?
The cap rate might not indicate the lessor's incremental borrowing rate. And that's really how the lease is recorded on the books. It might not. I don't think the lease and the balance sheet, the receivable that's being booked, is based on actual value. That's not how I interpret it. I interpret it as the receivable is just valuing the actual payments that they're going to receive based on their incremental borrowing rate, not necessarily valuing the value of that lease. Now, on a different note, if somebody's coming in to take a look at it to value that in a different light, as if you're going to sell it, that may have a different area, especially when if you're speaking of cap rates. I'm thinking that's more done for an analysis to determine a sale versus an analysis to actually determine the receivable.
Well, is it just a wrong question to ask?
I don't know if it's a wrong question to ask. Okay. I think it's one I never thought of.
Okay.
So I think it's interesting. I think it's interesting. It's an interesting question.
Tyler, thank you very much. You've just stumped the jury, and you're going to win a free piece of candy sent to you by CRE Radio. Maybe a little bit old, but I'll find one for you. Good job, Tyler. I think that's the first time we've stumped the guests, and I wouldn't have known any better. So, gentlemen, last time we spoke about this, a little over 2 years ago, dealing with options in the proposed standards 2 years ago was a very big issue. Is that still an issue, or does it make any difference? Peter, can you handle that?
It,
It's a smaller issue, and you know, Michael talked about that in a little bit. If there is a significant event before the tenant, and it affected more the tenant than the landlord, but before, in the first draft, the tenant had to make an educated guess as to the likelihood of it exercising its options, and then value its leases accordingly. Now, under the most recent draft, the whole question of options has basically been taken off the table. Now, that is where the tenant just looks at its current term and doesn't have to really take a look at those options. The exception to that would be from the standpoint of if the term was structured around a tax consideration, whereby you might have a short initial term purely from a tax standpoint. And with a number of options that are exercised concurrently with the commencement of the term. But by and large, I think that the whole question of options has essentially gone off the table. Michael can correct me if I'm wrong.
It's not as major of a deal now. You have to have a significant economic reason why you're not going to renew or whether you're going to renew for it to be now calculated into the initial lease liability.
Well, let's talk about some of those events or reasons. I think it was Mike Hammerslag. You and I were talking a little over a week ago about the type of events where you would likely renew an option. I think it was like when we were talking about three-year options and restaurants, et cetera. You want to talk about that a little bit? And some of the cute little maneuvers that some people had tried previously.
Well, I think Michael hit on the key point, which is this idea of significant economic incentive to execute. And that, so what's currently on the table in the current exposure draft is you do not have to include the options unless there is that significant economic incentive. So given that, then the question is, what are some of those thresholds? Is it a fair market value renewal structure that is significantly at a discount to market, say 70% fair market value renewal? Will that be a threshold that would indicate that it is a significant economic incentive? And if it is, then at lease commencement, given that that option is already part of the lease, then it will need to be included. But again, moving away from the bright line rules-based U.S. accounting standard, this becomes one that is needs to be determined, on, if you will, on a case-by-case basis.
Well, I would think here are some of the examples that that I was thinking of. A restaurant, as a perfect example. Restaurant equipment and the tenant improvement costs could be very significant. So, I mean, it's not unheard of to spend $250,000 or more setting up a restaurant. If you're going to spend $250,000 on a three-year lease, and then you have 10 three-year options, wouldn't it make sense that you're going to exercise those options? You're not going to spend that much money on a three-year lease. So wouldn't that be one of the factors that you would look at?
It could be one of the factors, but from a business economic standpoint, even though you've invested quite a lot of capital and your sunk costs are significant, it's quite possible that it is an appropriate period of time, 3 years, to evaluate whether you would choose to continue maintaining a restaurant in that location. You can argue both sides quite convincingly, I think.
Well,
I think a clear example could be a warehouse. You have a warehouse and you invest millions of dollars in automating the warehouse. It's not the same situation where you might not be in a good location to drive business to your warehouse, it might be a necessary center. I think there would be more more advantageous to recognize all those renewals because you've sunk millions of dollars into the automation of this warehouse. Whereas a restaurant, like Mike was saying, the business might not be there. So if you don't get all the business you want in 3 years, like you thought you would get more traffic, you might not stay. So go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, so Howard, the bottom line is that the accounting standards do not provide a hard and fast line. There is still the art associated with the business.
Certainly, you would have, I mean, even with the argument of the warehouse, logistics change. We've got a show coming up that's going to deal with logistics and being able to move product within 24 hours. Making a delivery to customers, the online versus, you know, the bricks and click argument. So all of that changes over a period of time, but the determining factor is not what actually happens, but what is reasonable will happen within a period of time. So you do look at factors on how much your investment is. What about depreciation? Is expensing or recognizing options, does that affect your depreciation at all from an investor's perspective? I'm hearing dead silence. I hear dead people. Guys.
I'm deferring to the CPAs on the call.
Okay, CPAs. Michael.
Could you repeat that so I make sure I'm hopefully answering the correct question?
Does it make any difference for depreciation purposes if you exercise, if you're likely going to exercise the option or you recognize the option period? So as an example, a restaurateur, not unusual to sign a 10-year lease with two 10-year options, just as an example. Is it possible that for accounting purposes under the new standards, they will basically treat this as a 30-year lease and recognize the options? Or will it make a difference if they treat it as a 10-year lease for depreciation?
It will make a difference. It will make a difference for depreciation purposes because actually in expense recognition purposes because the initial costs associated with the lease will be factored into the liability of how it will be amortized. So if you're coming out of pocket for that, they're going to add that and straight line those costs over the period of time. If they do only recognize 10 years versus the 30, that would make a difference.
So
in the straight line value.
So if someone is looking for basically to expense much of their initial costs, they would do that over a 10-year period. They probably wouldn't want to basically expense all of the options, correct? Am I saying that?
Yes, but they have to have good reason why they're not including those options.
Right. They can't just
so you have to have a significant reason why you're not doing it as much as you are having a significant reason why you are doing it. It's an art, as Peter said.
Well, I would think that this would be an area for abuse.
Well, this is why we have auditors that review the financial statements as a third party, almost like a judge sitting down and saying, we don't agree in our expert opinion with the way that you've treated this, or we do agree, and this is why. And it is that sober second thought at the financial statements that we all go through as people that operate companies. And it's the whole reason why we have an auditing system. And to that extent, I don't think that there would be abuse because you do have to justify why you're doing the things that you're doing to this third party, this outside party.
Well, I certainly would
see
it.
And there's disclosure rules, too.
Right.
I'm still trying to get more familiar with the disclosure rules and what exactly is required for both sides, the lessor and the lessee, but there are definitely more disclosure items. So those reasons may have to be disclosed. I'm not positive on that yet, but I'm getting there.
And of
course,
I
think that if you do make those assumptions, they have to be disclosed.
Well, what mm-hmm. I was also going to say is we really just touched upon it because this is a show basically about commercial real estate. We've been dealing with the real estate area. But Mike Hammerslag had mentioned right in the beginning that we have, you know, an A lease and a B lease. And the A leases really have to do primarily with personal property, correct?
Correct.
Good. So, Mike, then if we have a restaurateur, it's very possible that most of their equipment is leased. So they have to account for things differently than the real estate. So it's important for them to understand that too, correct? Mike?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, okay. This is now beginning to make sense to me. Yeah, I'm just kind of spending my time here trying to make sense of a very confusing thing to me, and it is now making sense. This is CRE Radio, and we'll be back after these messages. Please stay with us.
If you're a retail tenant, you really should belong to the NRTA. They're an organization of the tenants, by the tenants, and for the tenants. Whether you manage a large portfolio or just a mom and pop, the National Retail Tenants Association is on your side. NRTA exists to protect retail tenants everywhere and to make sure landlord billings are correct. Don't wait for your next statement of CAM charges to arrive. Log on to retailtenants.org. That's retailtenants.org. Find out more today. What's next for commercial real estate and retail marketing? Pop-up retail, and it's here now. PopUpInsider.com is the premier online resource for owners to advertise and fill properties for temporary use. PopUpInsider.com is where merchants and brands shop for temporary locations. See for yourself. Go to PopUpInsider.com, create your own account, market your empty spaces or view available locations for your business, all on one convenient site, PopUpInsider.com. For questions, feedback, or to suggest a topic, here's how to reach us. On our website, click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @CREradio or via email to questions@CREradio.com.
Welcome back to CRE Radio. Thanks for being with us today. And we are talking about the new lease accounting standards, or at least the proposed ones. Peter, will these proposals change how we negotiate leases?
No, not really. Not in the second draft. The first draft, there were some major concerns over how we would end up negotiating the leases. We still negotiate the leases on the basic business terms of rent, term, covenant, and then the lease wording. Some of the lease wording nomenclature should change just to be more generic. For an example, take out that the landlord's going to keep its books according to GAAP. It should be to current accounting standards. Little things like that. But from a landlord's perspective, and I can only speak from the landlord's perspective right now because that's the side of the table I'm on, those are the key areas. The if it's a shopping center, the use, the tenancy, the term, the basic rents, the total gross occupancy costs, none of those basic things will really change that much. From a tenant's perspective, again, because the change between the first and the second draft sort of looked at the leases and operating leases compared to a financing, and I'm using different terms than the accountants will use, but because of that, that's taken out some of the issues that they would have had to have dealt with, and it just means that we will continue to do business as we always have.
What about specific clauses? For instance, we know that we're dealing with the A lease and the B lease. A provision in the lease where the tenant fixtures revert to the landlord. Yeah, is that, are these proposed standards going to change any of that language? For example, those fixtures, who pays for them? You know, is the landlord pays for those fixtures and they revert back to the landlord, or if the tenant pays for them and they revert back to the landlord? Is that affected by any of this? Mike Hammerslag, do you have any thoughts on that?
I don't think that there'll be a significant difference in what we're doing today in that regard. That area, however, has always been certainly a gray area for a long time as to who actually owns the fixtures and issues related to cost segregation and depreciation. But I think we'll see more of a status quo.
Right. Any? What about the percentage rent provisions? Any of that to be affected?
Before, you had in the old exposure draft, you had to kind of guess and predict certain variable lease payments that weren't tied to an index. Now you don't. If you have things that are tied to an index, or these variable lease payments aren't carried forth as far. There's still some issues regarding them, but it's not as, onerous as it used to be. They're going to be treated differently. I think it's a little bit more relaxed when it comes to a variable lease payment.
Mike Hammerslag had used some words called observable and quantifiable. Mike, could you explain those? Yeah, as it may relate to real estate taxes, insurance, and CAMs.
Sure. Notably, in the value, the item that gets capitalized is the base rent. So that if you have a payment for real estate taxes that is part of your base rental payment and you can identify it, or for CAM and you can identify it, you can deduct those expenses before capitalizing the stream of payments or the rental stream and placing it on your balance sheet. That will lower, being able to identify that those items will enable you to lower the gross amount that's placed onto the balance sheet.
What about
the... Go
ahead, Mike.
There'll be slightly some drafting to indicate that when you have a base year, for instance, that includes, or maybe two base years, one for taxes and one for operating expenses, maybe make it clear that it states that the base rent includes the base rent or the base year expenses, because at the signing of the lease, depending on the timing of what period you're using for your base year, those amounts might be unknown. So you may record your initial liability at one thing, and then it might take till the landlord does a reconciliation to determine, you know, at the next, at the end of that year, to determine what the base year expenses are. And based on what Mike is saying, you then could use that to change or pull out the expenses that are associated with the base year real estate taxes.
Mike,
it's a timing issue.
That sounds a little bit complicated to me, and maybe we'll follow up after the show on our notes section. Michael, you and I can probably get into that a bit and see what kind of language might be helpful in the leases. What about the CPI rent escalator? How is that going to be, that kind of language, when there's an annual change in the rent? How is that going to affect things, Mike?
Well, the interesting thing about CPI clauses in the current exposure draft is the way they would occur and affect the lease ultimately requires the balance, the outstanding balance of the lease, to be recalculated every time you reach the index date. So in other words, let's say your lease indexed every year. That means at that point, every year in a 10-year lease, so over the course of at least 10 times, you will recalculate the asset amount and the liability amount, effectively rebalancing them every time. I believe that in execution and application, CPI index leases will require more effort to maintain and calculate over their lease term than leases that have fixed rent increases or step rents.
Would your comments remain the same if there was a minimum? Because a lot of the leases we get to see is a CPI increase with a minimum of a 3% increase per year. Does that make any difference?
You would still have to reevaluate every time you reach the index date.
Sure, because it could be more.
Correct.
Well, okay. When we come back, we will be talking about all of the relevant dates that everybody has to listen to. So why don't we hear from some of our guests, or not guests, we've been hearing from our guests. How about our sponsors?
Manage a shopping center? Always looking for new ideas? Tactics. Tactics Magazine is the idea magazine for shopping center marketing directors all over the world. Exciting promotions, gift with purchase programs, and full-blown ad campaigns. Every edition of Tactics is packed with features, ideas, and news you can use to get the word out and grow your numbers. How can you manage a shopping center without your tactics? Log on to tacticsmagazine.com. Today would be good. tacticsmagazine.com.
Attention commercial real estate brokers and professionals. Have you ever struggled to find the true ownership behind a commercial property? What about finding the phone number, email, and name of the actual decision maker? ProspectNow.com tracks this information on more than 10 million commercial and multifamily properties nationwide. Howard's listeners are invited to a 3-day free trial. Simply go to prospectnow.com and enter the promotion code Howard.
That's prospectnow.com.
For questions, feedback, or to suggest a topic, here's how to reach us. On our website, click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @creradio. Or via email to questions@creradio.com.
Thanks for staying with us. Let's begin to wrap up this edition of CRE Radio by talking about the time periods. Well, we know that the most recent release date is May 13th. That's been, or May 16th. We know that because that's when Michael Vandergoot basically was speaking to a bunch of people. And the commencement or the comment period ends September 13th, correct?
Yes.
Anybody have any comments that you might have to the board? Mike, what about you? Anything that has struck you that perhaps you would like to comment about?
Well, my comments really focus on the fact that we've been dragging this on too long. And while we certainly need to get this as correct as possible, the reality is that this is an externality to our business, one whereby we're really only changing the way we're making reports look. It should not have an impact on the economics of our business in the sense of if a 10-year lease was right this morning and the rules were to change this afternoon, there's no reason not to think that a 10-year lease isn't correct for you tomorrow morning. So it would be nice to see this wrap up and us move forward with some regulations such that we can all embrace them, make the best efforts, and get our businesses on the right footing with all the information that's necessary for the reporting of this new regulation.
Michael, you have any comments that you would think perhaps some additional tweaking may be necessary?
Although they did, in not a specific way, address operating expenses and real estate taxes, I think they could have at least provided maybe an example in here of how to treat them or what would cause them not to be included or to be included in the initial base rent and the initial calculation of liability.
And Peter, what about you?
Yeah, I agree with the other two gentlemen, and more specifically with Mike. And this is also a word of caution to those people that would end up preparing statements, is you have to prepare statements in context with previous operating statements. So to reflect the new accounting standards, and this is why they should just get on with it, you're going to have to go back and restate prior periods. That's a lot of work, and I think my comment is more directed to the people that actually operate companies. Be prepared for an avalanche of work that will need to be done to harmonize your reporting to the new standards, and that includes going back to some of the old reports that you've done.
Which is an important point when we talk about when we expect these accounting standards to come into play and be effective. I have a date, and this is a date that Mike Hammerslag had thrown out, of January 2017. If that's the date that this stuff is going to be effective, why do we have to worry about it now? Mike?
Well, as Peter indicated, the restatement issue is one that is significant. So if you're needing to present financial statements under the new regulation on January 1st, that means typically you'll have to restate 2016 and 15. It will require a lot of work. Leases that have already expired need to be, if you will, resurrected into whatever system of record you're going to use, and the data that's necessary to create the reports will need to be modified, created, tweaked, if you will. The issue of transition for those early comparative years is one that will take some time for both real estate, accounting, and legal departments to massage and get that right.
So if we're talking about a 2017 effective date, as we can see, we're really talking about you got to get on your horse now about January of 2014, correct?
Yes.
That's correct.
Yeah. And that's why we're talking about it now. Kind of makes sense to me. Finally, one other thing. A lot of our listeners are property managers and lease administrators. Do they need to know anything at all about any of this?
Any property manager that may handle financing will definitely need to know so that they can make aware and be prepared that their financial ratios may be changing so that they can explain it to the banks, which I'm sure they're all being educated now, but it will throw off some metrics, debt service coverage ratios and things of that nature. So they just have to be aware that when these things are issued, these standards, it may impact some covenants that they have.
Peter?
I agree with Michael on that one. As far as day-to-day operating of the property management function won't appreciably change. And likewise, for the lease administrator on the landlord side, there won't be an appreciable change in the way that they structure or deal with administering the leases. There will be some changes if, for an example, people are not straight-lining their rents right now, they'll need to do so. And that's more from the accounting and finance departments rather than property management, pure property management and lease administration.
Mike, do you have any final comments?
Yeah, on the tenant side, I think there'll be a, if you will, a new world order coming into place and really focusing quite a lot of attention in this one area. Notably, as the accounting regulations change, particularly for the public companies, the auditors are going to come in and really take a fine-tooth comb to what's been going on in those real estate departments, perhaps an area that has been, if you will, forgotten about for a number of years. I think you're going to see a lot of effort needing to be placed on data management and the ability to track everything as will be required under the new regulations. And that's not to say that it's just a public company issue. Companies that are private that ultimately want to go public do have some issues related to also deep comparative financial statements. Notably, there hasn't been a lot of conversation about it, but something such as Regulation SX from the Securities Exchange Commission that requires companies to provide deeper comparative financial statements when going public will mean that a potential restatement period could go back as many as 5 years in some cases. I think this is a great opportunity for real estate to integrate itself within the company from the general counsel's office into the CFO's office and down. And I think that it's one that will require effort by lease administrators, real estate departments, and finance departments combined.
So this may be an annuity type thing for accountants and lawyers, right?
Well, I think it will certainly be the hot point for a number of years once the regulation is identified, the application is identified, that date. And then I think also the effort to get there is one that's typically a multi-year process.
Well, I would say, oh, goody, being a lawyer, but I know that I'm not going to be getting dirty into the nitty-gritty of this myself. That's not my bailiwick. Gentlemen, you've done a great job. I really appreciate it, and I'd like to thank you. Do any of you have any speaking engagements coming up?
I do. Michael, I'll be speaking September 25th. At the Real Estate Conference for the New Jersey Society of CPAs. It's an 8-hour event, but I will only be boring people for an hour with this topic.
Oh, God bless you.
Howard, Mike Hammerslag, I will have upcoming the National Retail Tenants Association newsletter. I have an article coming forward on this particular topic that we've been speaking about today. Also at their national conference at the end of September, if I recall, the 23rd through the 25th, I'll be speaking about advanced real estate finance, as well as also holding a roundtable discussion again on the lease accounting standards. And with that date being after the end of the comment period, we may have some new information available to us.
Or maybe if you're lucky, it'll come out on the morning that you're speaking.
And Howard, while
I personally
don't have a speaking engagement coming up, our CEO for Partners REIT, Patrick Minuti, will be speaking at the ICSC Canadian Convention on Wednesday, September 18th at the C-Suite Real Estate Developer and Investor Forum.
Oh, outstanding, outstanding. So, by the way, let me just kind of throw something out there to my friends over at the NRTA, one of the best organizations that I've ever been associated with. I really, if you have the opportunity to go to their conference, their annual conference, is just a wealth of knowledge. They really focus on education and knowledge, and I'm a great admirer of them, as well as IREM. Just to throw it out, I'd see IREM just simply on the other side of them. We have some upcoming shows. Our next scheduled show is Social Media Best Practices, in which we'll have Bobby Reuter on the show. We'll have Duke Long. We will have Sarah Malcolm from ICSC, and we will have Mike Legazzo. We will be talking about Twitter. We will be talking about LinkedIn, to some extent Facebook, and we'll be talking about Google+. And we'll be going into a lot more of the depth of the personal nature of these and how to maximize the value rather than tricks. The idea is to get you to understand it. We also have an upcoming show on the hospitality sector, senior living, medical buildings. Also, we've got a whole series of shows on understanding LEEDs. That's LEEDS. Part of the U.S. Green Building Council, Energy Star Ratings, and something called GRESB. That's GRESB, which will be very interesting. We'll be talking about our logistics show, Merging of Clicks and Bricks. We've got a show scheduled for Property Management Best Tactics. And we're also going to be talking about Learn to Earn in Commercial Real Estate as another show. Finally, I do want to mention CRE Radio is not just radio anymore. We've been doing short but sweet video tweets, and we've got quite a few where we have these little 1 to 2 minute video clips in which the interviewees, I sound so much like a lawyer, we actually focus on a specific subject. And the focus is not necessarily on the person talking, but the information that they provide. So, for example, we have the most recent one we've put up is Mike Phillips, who's the co-chair of Phillips Edison Arc. Mike Ziegler from Colliers International. We've got two short but sweet video tweets from Mike. Greg Maloney, president and CEO of JLL. Joseph Kosenzich, vice chair of Inland Real Estate Group. Eric Paulson, president of Auction.com. And quite a few others. Those are just the examples. So, gentlemen, thank you very much for being on the show. You, of course, educated me to a great extent, as much as possible, on this topic. So, thank you, and without further ado, we are going to be closing the show.
Please listen again next time to CRE Radio with Howard Klein. Every live and recorded broadcast is accessible on your desktop, tablet, or smartphone at creradio.com or in iTunes, just search for CRE Radio. Here's how to reach us with your questions, feedback, and show topics you'd like to hear about. On our website, click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @CREradio, via email to questions@CREradio.com, or call in during the live show at 619-393-6492 and press 1 to be placed in queue. CRE Radio broadcasts are presented on an informational basis only, with the intent of engaging, educating, and entertaining our listeners. Howard and his guests' conversations specifically do not offer legal advice. If you need legal advice, please consult your own attorney. Portions of the show may have been pre-recorded. Unauthorized editing or copying of the show without the express written consent of CRE Radio is strictly prohibited. All rights reserved.
And this is really a wrap.